I think roller derby is a hopeful thing.
He earned enough money from selling plants that he paid off the mortgage on his house.
People always want to know, is that a lie or is that the truth?
I completely disassembled this Triumph TR6.
I wish I could have been a professional woman soccer player.
I'm Martha Woodruff, and this is The Spark, an exploration of interesting people doing interesting things. Ben Mudell is a silent film accompanist who often plays for public screenings at Culpeper's Packard Campus for audiovisual conservation. Ben's based in New York, but as the thrill of talking to a silent film accompanist was overwhelming, I decided to do my first ever Sparkian phone interview. So, I asked Ben over the phone, how'd you get into your chosen line of work?
I don't know if I really got into it as a line of work as much as it was something that either found me or it turned out I was really supposed to be doing all along. Growing up, I was a huge silent film fan. From the time I was a toddler, I'm told I found Charlie Chaplin on TV back in the pre-cable days when they used to show silent movies on television. And I grew up either collecting them in 8mm or I knew a new collector or two who I would go to their house and watch silent films at their house. And when I was also a musician, and I wasn't a performing musician, I wasn't conservatory material or anything, but I played the piano and took lessons. And I was a filmmaker as well, and I got to film school at NYU and found that in the pre-video days, they were showing silent films in the film history classes on film, but with no music. And it bothered me that these films I adored were bombing in front of hundreds of film students every week. And I went to the head of the department. And again, I don't know how or why I did this, being terribly uncomfortable performing in front of people and having not done much improvising or anything like that, but volunteered to accompany the silent films. I figured it's got to be better than nothing. And the head of the department was very positive, and I basically started playing piano to accompany silent films for the film history classes. And there was one guy named Lee Irwin who was in his 70s at the time and had been a film organist during the silent era and was the house organist at the Carnegie Hall Cinema. And they had a Wurlitzer organ there, and he was very interested in helping me out. We became friends, and he became a mentor to me. And I learned, the philosophy that he used, which really resonated with where I was at in terms of what to play, what not to play, what to play when, et cetera, et cetera.
Now, how long did it take for this to be fun?
I would say it was probably at least partially fun right off the bat because I felt like I was helping these movies that I liked so much come to life for film students. And I still feel that today that when the lights go off, I'm working for Doug Fairbanks or Mary Pickford or whoever it is who worked real hard 70, 80, 90 years ago to make these films, that I'm helping them bring their film back onto the screen and to be a piece of enjoyable entertainment again today. After film school at NYU, I did a couple of jobs doing production assistant work, which is, standing around holding a walkie-talkie watching parked cars. It's very existential. You don't know who you are, why you're there. People forget you're there. Did I eat? Am I falling asleep? And it's hard to think this has anything to do with making movies, which watching parked cars with orange cones is definitely part of the process. So that's what I thought I was going to do. But at some point, I wound up, again, I kind of dared myself to audition for an improv troupe and got in, having done zero performing and being really uncomfortable doing it. And
where was this improv troupe?
It's a group called the First Amendment. The troupe itself isn't around anymore. They were on Bond Street in New York City, and I think they were one of the best. I learned basic improvisational comedy and some sketch writing from them, started doing some stand-up in the club there as well. And a few years later, I went through Gotham City Improv's program. That's something that really opened me up musically as an improviser as well.
How does that open you up musically?
I was able to apply the same things I had learned in improvisational comedy into my music, the idea of making a bold choice and going with it and committing to it, the idea that when you're in a scene and somebody introduces a piece of information, you internally go absolutely and dive in and add yourself to the equation. So as an improviser of music, especially for silent film, it really helped me a lot. Instead of feeling nervous about, oh gosh, where am I going? What's happening next? Am I ready? I would, you know, sort of plant my hands on the keys and play something and constantly watching the screen and taking it all in and listening to the audience and saying, you know, and being open to, okay, this music is not going well in my gut and I'll shift gears. A couple years ago, I found myself with a bunch of rare or lost silent films that I had picked up on eBay and other places over the years, and they were just sitting in my closet, and I figured if I have these films and nobody can see them, it's, you know, then what's the point? And I did a Kickstarter to do a DVD of these films, which I called Accidentally Preserved, because these were rental prints from the 30s and 40s when...
Wow.
The films were made into 16mm safety film prints for the home rental markets, like the Netflix of the Art Deco era.
Uh-huh.
And even though the 35mm nitrate prints are long gone, these films, these versions of them, these prints survive. It's like they were accidentally preserved. That's what I came up with. So I raised more money than I needed to, put out the DVD. Royalties from the first DVD funded a second volume. And I had realized that I had sort of discovered this wormhole of home video distribution for films that a lot of companies wouldn't be bothered with. And I became aware of the mishaps of Must You Suffer, the fact that there were a whole lot of these films. I had seen one or two at a classic comedy film convention years ago called Slapstickon. But my friend Steve Massa had written a research article about Harry Watson Jr., who starred in the films, and the series. And I read it, and I realized, oh my gosh, 30 of these films were made, released on a weekly basis in three series of 10, and the Library of Congress has 24 of them. And I have been accompanying silent films at the Library of Congress for the last four years.
Is this the Packard campus?
It's the Packard campus.
In Culpeper.
In Culpeper. Okay. So my friend Steve and I called in all the Must You Suffer films they had. We looked at all of them, and I took that and this wormhole that I discovered and decided, you know what? We should let's put out a DVD of the Must You Suffer films because they're a lot of fun. And really, except for an occasional classic film festival showing for collectors, these have not been seen by an audience in almost 100 years. And they're a lot of fun. They're really weird and funny and bizarre. And so, again, I did a Kickstarter, raised more money than I needed to, had new HD transfers made off of the archival master material by the Library of Congress. Tweaked them, scored them, made a DVD, and it's been out for about a month now. On Thursday, May 29th, we're doing a show of some of the Must You Suffer films. There are eight of the mishaps of Must You Suffer films on the DVD, plus a couple of extras, and we're going to show four of them at the show on May 29th. My friend Steve Massa will be there. He's a film historian and really has studied these films and the people in them, and he'll introduce it, and I'll accompany the films live.
Find a link to the Packard Campus movie schedule, as well as other links and a picture of Ben Modell in action on the Spark page at WMRA.org.